Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight on Hercules and the Space Gods, I'm proud to bring you Disclosure Network with Nick Curto. Greetings and welcome, Nick. How are you this fine evening?
Never better, Hercules. It's been quite a weekend. As you know, what a roller coaster ride of weather here in Manhattan. We've had some very, very difficult weather here to endure. Mr. Winter is still very much with us. And on occasion, we get a nice spring-like day, so it's a roller coaster still. I'm sure it's like that in New Jersey, where you live.
Yeah, yes, it is. And we traveled to northwestern New Jersey today on some errands, and it was even more of a roller coaster there in the mountains and the woods.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I can imagine. It's beautiful, and yet I think we're all looking forward to spring. Am I right?
You are absolutely correct, and I'm looking forward to tonight's show, as always. I'll hand it over to you now, and if you need me, just holler. I'll be here.
Excellent. Thank you so much. The program is Disclosure Network with Nick Curto, and I'm Nick Curto, your host and co-founder and director of Disclosure Network New York. DNNY is a grassroots organization now celebrating our 25th year. Can't believe it's been that long, but it has. We provide two meetings per month throughout the year in Manhattan. We focus on cutting-edge UFO ET issues, paranormal phenomenon of all kinds, as well as many important and related subjects from a wide variety of sources as we go deep, real deep, into these exciting and sometimes totally misunderstood subjects that the mainstream press will not talk about or ever discuss. Our members worldwide do intensive investigative research into these various topics and then share that information with our group at our meetings and also on the internet. We are doing two Zoom meetings this month. One is the first Sunday of each month with a speaker or a group program. The second Zoom, which we're going to do this month, is on the third Thursday of the month from 7:30 to 9 for our members. And that meeting is a group discussion of whatever topics we want to discuss. We also meet the center on West 13th Street throughout the year for special meetings then, and that's the first Sunday of the month from 2:30 to 4 p.m. After that, we have a coffee hour at a nearby coffee shop at 4 o'clock. If you'd like to find out more about the membership, and I hope you will, you can email me, and I'll give you that information. My email address is nicknyny1, and that's the numeral 1, at gmail.com. Again, nicknyny1 at gmail.com. Our motto right from day one is, quote, connecting the dots to seek truth, unquote. We have available to everyone worldwide for members, the DNNY News Blast email service focusing on the topics of special interest. It's as cutting edge as it gets, and our members get that every single day as members send in to me what they have just uncovered and want the rest of the group to know about it. Our website is dnny.info. That's dnny.info. And with that said, we'll get right to our March 24th DNNY podcast. A very warm welcome to my good friend and colleague, Dr. Ray Keller, also known as Cosmic Ray. Welcome, dear friend. Ray, are you there? I'm not hearing any feedback, huh? Hercules, Ray, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Well, I just wanted to welcome you to our podcast tonight. I am delighted that you could join us.
Oh, thank you, Nick, and thank you, Hercules, for the opportunity to be on the wonderful program and to discuss various aspects of the UFO phenomena?
Well, this first weekend of March 2024 has turned out to be Cosmic Ray Weekend. Because we have tonight, of course, we have the DNNY podcast, which we're doing right now. And then tomorrow, Sunday, we have the DNNY Zoom meeting for DNNY members. So it's a two-part. And I know you're going to be doing a different topic for each of these two events. And that is very, very exciting and very much looking forward to that.
Well, Nick, I've come out with a new book. It just came out, so you're the first one, and your audience is the first to hear about it. It's called Pennsylvania
Excellent.
UFO Portal, the Wide Variety of UFO Experience, and I team up again with Fred Saluga, who is the Assistant Director of Pennsylvania Mutual UFO Network, and bringing the undeniable evidence concerning UFO reports and extraterrestrial encounters occurring throughout Pennsylvania since World War II and the Philadelphia Experiment all the way up to these contemporary times.
Well, you certainly have my attention, and I'm sure every member of our group. Wow, fantastic. Now, that would also be on the why don't you give right now, this is a good time to give your website or the Amazon author's page?
Oh, yes. Just go to Amazon and type Keller Venus, and all the books will pop up. I have
Excellent.
I have a total of 10 books published so far, and there's another one in the works that will be coming out very soon as well.
You know, I have two of your books. I bought them when I saw you and attended that wonderful luncheon that Karen Wallow, a wonderful ufologist, produced. And I bought two of those books, and they are so amazing. I can recommend them both. I bought the Venus Rising, which is an absolute masterwork. I can absolutely say that. A cosmic history of the second planet. And also the other book that I got was also amazingly interesting and packed full of information. And that's The Vast Venus Conspiracy, which is also excellent. So I'm highly recommending both of these books, which are fairly recent and you can't go wrong. Every self-respecting ufologist should have both of these in their library, and I'm sure your new book, too.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. There are 7 books so far in the Venus series, and the last one in the Venus series is Flying Saucers from Venus They Come, and that one deals largely with UFO propulsion systems and all of the research and so forth that has been going on in the 30s, 40s, and 1950s. And it's got names, key personnel in the military and the civilian scientific community, the projects that they were working on, and a bit of the technical information as well for all the techie nuts and bolts people that are out there. It's an amazing book, and I'll be discussing that one tomorrow.
Excellent. That is exciting, and I'm looking so forward to that as well as the members. We're also going to record that Zoom, and we'll put it out on YouTube so that the public can also see it later on when it comes out, which will be in a few days. I want to do a little tiny background, which I can read, and then we'll get right into your talk tonight. Dr. Keller's books explore the many facets and conditions of life on Venus in many dimensions from a perspective of conspiracies, history, theology, ufology, and current events, especially space research. Dr. Keller has lived and worked in 43 different countries. That was amazing when I read that, and has been writing about UFOs and paranormal phenomena all the way since 1967. He was the founder and director of the Outer Space International Research and Investigation Society, and that was in Hillmar, California, as well as the publisher and co-editor of New Millennium Star, a monthly pre-internet tabloid newspaper. Interesting. He has a very special interest in the planet Venus. Well, that's an understatement if I've ever heard one. For sure, for sure. And I got to say, Ray, that your deep, deep, deep research is so exciting because you don't miss a thing. You really don't. You're incredibly, read. You go deep into these various areas and you bring up things that certainly I have never heard of, and I thought I knew quite a bit, but you go into this really deeply, and I think that any ufologist would really appreciate the work, the hard work that you do, because it's really amazing, and it gives such a great background to Venus and all the various aspects of it. So without any further ado, tell us a little bit about what's on your mind tonight.
Well, I've got this new book, Pennsylvania UFO Portal, and it can be pre-ordered on Amazon, but it deals with sundry types of UFO and paranormal encounters that have been cataloged in Pennsylvania by myself and Fred Saluga from the Mutual UFO Network. And we catalog these according to the system set up by Dr. J. Allen Hynek in 1972. He was a former scientific consultant to the Air Force Project Sign that turned into Blue Book for over 20 years. And we all know about Close Encounters of the Third Kind because of the movie. But just a brief rundown is that the first kind are just sightings of UFOs, and these are the most common. Close Encounters of the Second Kind involved some sort of trace evidence, like perhaps a crop circle or marks in the ground from a landing pod, something like that. Then skipping over to Close Encounters of the Fourth Kind involves abductions by aliens of human beings. And then Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind are those where some kind of bilateral contact with an extraterrestrial or ultra-dimensional entity occurs. And this type of information exchange can take place through some amiable form of communication or perhaps by some form of mental telepathy. Close Encounters of the Sixth Kind are where a UFO or its occupants is deemed the direct cause of the injury or death of a human being. And Close Encounters of the Seventh Kind are decidedly the most controversial because in this type of encounter, a human and extraterrestrial or ultra-dimensional mate and produce a hybrid being. Not too many people were aware of these other types of encounters, but when Dr. Hynek wrote The UFO Experience in 1972 and devised this system, he really expanded the horizons of UFO research because he was starting to think more like Jacques Vallée, Dr. Vallée, the computer specialist from France and premier ufologist, as well as the late John A. Keel, who wrote The Anomalist, a newsletter in New York that went out around the world and brought researchers of all kinds of paranormal phenomena and Fortean phenomena together with ufologists in looking at new perspectives in approaching the UFO phenomena.
there is so much information that really is out there. And when someone like you, who's a deep researcher, really gets into this, you uncover amazing, amazing information and data that very few people are aware of. And that is very exciting, absolutely. Ray, how originally, if you can remember, the planet Venus is incredibly important to you. Tell me, the very beginnings of that interest, what propelled you to especially focus on Venus?
Well, when I was growing up in Bedford, Ohio, in the 50s and 60s, I came across the books of George Adamski and Howard Menger, many of the early contactees. And I always felt that that there was a ring of truth to them, and I wanted to know more about our sister planet, because I just didn't believe even back then that the government was telling us all there is to know about it. For instance, 47 space probes have come and gone to Venus. That's more than the moon or any other other planet. And you know, why would the government be doing that and spending billions of dollars if it was some dead, lifeless world, or if it was super hot cinder? You know, it doesn't make any sense. And then a lot of the things that George Adamski and Howard Menger and these Orfeo Angelucci and these people talked about is coming true in the headlines. It's slowly leaking out. For example, the recent probe that went to the moon and exploring for water, that there's water at the south pole of the moon and in the shadows of craters, that there's frozen lakes there, and that the ground under the lunar surface is moist. And they talked about that you could even, Howard Menger said, you could even grow potatoes and other things in lunar soil, and they proved that was possible. They've discovered phosphines in the atmosphere of Venus, which can only be produced from living organisms. They recently discovered at the end of last year massive amounts of oxygen in the Venusian atmosphere, and because the planet is so hilly and so forth, super hard atmospheric pressure all over the planet, that there are spots that are more conducive to life and so forth. And in the process of, you know, I've uncovered documents from the Project White Stork, which the American program of monitoring the Russians and their space program, which particularly Venus and Mars, and then journals from Russia and Eastern Europe revealing information about Venus that's not readily available over here. So I've made it my life mission to bring these things to an awareness.
Well, you certainly have, and you've done one heck of a job, too. I mean, I'm very impressed, and I just want to say you deserve a high praise for digging into this amazing subject and coming up with such amazing data that you have to actually rethink what people have told you, what the press, what the major media has told you. You have to rethink that once you get this new information. So it's really a journey of discovery, as you know, and you certainly have been one of the heads of that. I wanted to ask you too, you mentioned in your books, Howard Menger, I believe that's how it's pronounced, in New Jersey.
Yes.
And the town where he lives was going to do last summer a weekend honoring him They were going to bring in ufologists to do lectures. They had entertainment planned, and they had actually, I was very honored that they asked me if I'd be one of the speakers there, and I agreed. I said, you bet I will. Later, they found out that they needed more time for the advertising, so they pulled that event to this coming summer. I don't have the dates yet, but that's going to be really, really something. Do you remember what the town was that Howard Menger lived
in?
New Jersey?
Highbridge.
That's right, Highbridge,
New
Jersey.
It's up in the north, the northwestern part of the state.
Right,
almost to the Pennsylvania border.
Okay, very good. And we had researched for my group what hotels were available there, and we were planning to go for the weekend. So we're looking forward to the announcement of the of it actually taking place this coming summer. So that's going to be really something to look at. And Val Thor has certainly been brought up in my meetings here in New York many times, because that is quite a story unto itself. And as you know, he and some of his crew visited Howard Menger in his home of New Jersey, or rather the grounds there, for a UFO meeting that they attended. And there's even photographs of him and his crew that were sitting there listening to the speakers that were there. So that again is quite a story unto itself. And are you planning to go to that particular weekend coming up?
Oh yes, I'll certainly make room for that if I'm not already scheduled. I will be going to this castle in Germany, in Lake Constance, and also to Memmingen in Germany, and then to Mount Shasta, and even up to Canada through the summer months. But if I even have a couple days free, I'll make time to go there, because I would like to show the same pictures that I showed with Karen Wallow's group. Those were from the files of August C. Roberts, the photographer who took the pictures of Valiant Thor, and also includes all the other members of the club individually and their comments about what was happening throughout that entire day. And the amazing things that Valiant Thor wrote down in his notebook and was collected by August C. Roberts after the meeting. And those were from his files in Ogden, New Jersey.
No, I never saw those photographs before, and I was thrilled that was part of the event. To take a look at those photographs and who was there, and get a little more background about what was going on that day. It was an extraordinary afternoon on any level you can imagine. And can you imagine? Too bad that you and I weren't there for that one, because that would have been one of the high points of your life, I would think.
Oh, yes. Well, I have something additional that I put in this book on Pennsylvania from my Keller Venus files. These are photos of UFOs as living entities. It was on a roll of film taken by the contactee Howard Menger on the afternoon of 8 September 1958 in the Blue Mountains somewhere in Franklin County, Pennsylvania. And then his wife, beautiful wife Connie, she published her husband's photos in the October 1959 issue of Fantastic Universe, and that was published in New York by Great American Publications. And I actually have the receipt for those movies, films, and clips of the UFOs as living entities from the photography shop where they were produced.
Excellent, excellent. Well, that's fantastic. Howard Menninger, he passed on now, correct?
Yes, he passed on in 2009, I believe. They were living down in they were living in Florida, and had moved from New Jersey because of all the publicity and all the commotion around their property, and they just wanted to have some peace and quiet in their later years.
Well, that makes sense. God bless them for doing that. And did they have children? Are there children from that marriage?
Yes, they adopted. They adopted one, and a boy from Scandinavia. And I met him in New Mexico at the Stargate convention in Albuquerque. And he was surprised that I had all this information about his adopted father and mother.
Oh wow!
And he was so surprised. But I've been doing this and publishing Flying Saucer magazine since the 19, and writing about UFOs and so forth since the 1960s, and so I've had a lot of correspondence and interaction with people like Gray Barker, the Saucerian Press, and also Jean Duplantier up in Canada with Saucer Space and Science, and then Gabriel Green out in Yucca Valley, California, with Flying Saucers International, and later changed to UFO International. So we would exchange periodicals and information and so forth, as well as Raymond Palmer with Flying Saucers magazine. I even had some letters and a couple articles in the Flying Saucers, in Ray Palmer's Flying Saucers magazine back in the day.
Well, that's a good 55 years or so. So that is an amazing record of accomplishments for such a long period of time. So really, Ray, that's an amazing, amazing body of work. And again, I just wanted to refer to your wonderful book. So I believe there's 10 of them, correct?
Yes, that's right. 11, if you include the my dissertation. Virginia University.
Okay. Well, that's fantastic. And they're all available. And again, I recommend as a reader of Ray's books that take a look at them, because they are outstanding information and a lot of facts and data that I believe most people do not know. And what I also enjoyed is the more fanciful areas of the book, showing the different sci-fi movies from way back when, featuring Venus, and how various writers and directors and actors went into that subject as movies. They're wonderful. I've seen some of those movies, and they are fantastic. And they all were focusing on Venus and different aspects of what they envisioned Venus would be like, and also what the people, the ETs. And also, just to say that what we're talking about, Venus population, they look very, very much like Earthlings. They are not that that strange looking. Maybe that's the wrong word. They're just different would be the right word for that, because it depends on your perspective of what's strange. But
considering that Venus and Earth emerge from the same cosmic cloud of nebular dust and so forth, sometime back at the beginning of the solar system, 14.5 billion years ago, it's not surprising. The same elements that compose the Earth are on Venus. It's about the same size as the Earth, maybe maybe 200 miles in diameter less, has a rocky surface and atmosphere, and they often refer to Venus as Earth's twin planet. Long ago, however, though, there was a cosmic bombardment of meteorites, possibly from the time that there was a planet, a large planet between Mars and Jupiter that exploded and left a lot of debris and pelted all the planets, and significantly to Venus, and slowed its rotation down to it takes almost three-quarters of a year for it to for a Venusian day, for one complete day. So the Venusian civilization had to go underground. They moved underground, although there's still some structures up on the surface.
And Val Thor had mentioned that also, that our community, our the people that are the population is deep underneath the ground in Venus. He mentioned that as, and that story about Val Thor again and going to Washington landing in nearby Washington D.C. and the fact that two policemen saw the spaceship landing, and they actually drew guns and went over and approached it. And according to the story, Val Thor came out as a very, very likable, warm guy who looked just very much like Earthlings in every way, and asked if he could approach the president of the United States, because he had something that he very important that he wanted to tell the president. And they, long story short, they eventually made it possible for him to speak to Eisenhower and I believe also Nixon. And his mission was to say that Venus has advanced medical power sources, new power sources, all kinds of advanced technologies that they were willing to give our planet in exchange for, and here it comes, the absolute promise that we would not test any more nuclear atomic weaponry of any kind, that we would stay clearly away from that, because not only is it dangerous for us, but also those waves of that huge energy force, when those are detonated, go out into space and it actually interrupts the other planets. And they were very upset about that. So
what happens is it gets trapped in the solar wind. And the solar wind is connected, you know, all the way to the sun, and it comes to the north pole of all the planets. The ancient Scandinavians referred to it as the Rainbow Bridge, and that's where that's where the gods came down. But it's just a portal that they could travel on between planets to go into the North Pole, polar areas of all the different planets. If you look at all the different planets, you'll see some weird coronal effects around all of them. Even Saturn has one that's shaped like a giant pentagon. The clouds, and it doesn't ever change, and it's right above the North Pole of Saturn. But you know, as far as the Valiant Thor and science fiction movies, I have to say that back in 1951, when they did the movie On the Day the Earth Stood Still, there was actually a follow-up to that movie that was done in Great Britain with Patricia Neal, who also starred in the first one as the love interest of the extraterrestrial. And but it's a different Venusian. It was called Visitor from Venus. And that one had an individual that came down and talked to the military authorities in the British Isles. He didn't have any fingerprints, and he came down in a scout craft that was electromagnetically powered and so forth, and then he had to fix it and escape. It was a really good movie, and it came out 5 years before Valiant Thor arrived, but it almost predicted everything about him. So this is what I call the soft disclosure from the movies.
Yes, and, yes.
We see that they're kind of preparing us, the moguls of Hollywood and the movie industry, for eventual contact, so that it'll be easier to accept the extraterrestrials when they do make their presence known here. And Desmond Leslie was the co-author of some of the books, with the first book, Flying Saucers Have Landed, with George Adamski, and he was the technical consultant of those movies, Day the Earth Stood Still and Visitor from Venus, and then Major Donald E. Kehoe, who is a retired Marine Corps major and a pilot, and eventually became the director of NICAP, National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena in Washington, D.C., the largest civilian UFO group. He was the technical director for a movie that came out in 1956 called Earth versus the Flying Saucers.
So you can see the planning here, subtle and not so subtle,
of
introducing these various ideas and making them more palatable to people. Do you, Ray? I want to ask you, as a personal opinion here, some people have said that when the disclosure comes full tilt and people realize that we have brothers and sisters on other planets that either look like us or do not, how would that affect the world's religions? Do you think it would be a positive or negative? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Oh yes. I have an example of that. It's in my Pennsylvania UFO book, as a matter of fact. And involved a UFO group called Central New Jersey Pennsylvania UFO Study Group that was just formed like a casual get-together type club in 1984, but then it morphed into a more permanent organization. But in the beginning, they had quite a controversy. I guess you could say that the UFO club threw the greatest Hail Mary pass in the history of theological speculation when they started, because the topic of BVM sightings came up.
Oh.
BVM is Blessed Virgin Mary. That was in the summer of 1985.
Oh, that's right.
There was a big thing there because all the newspapers and the media in Pennsylvania and New Jersey were talking about it, because these members were charged up because of Eric von Daniken. You know, he wrote those books about the ancient astronauts, and this is all before Ancient Aliens. But the Catholic Church and some and the leaders of the Catholic Church and other ecclesiastical leaders of other churches were really upset about this UFO group making these speculations and talking about this stuff at their meeting. They were saying that the BVM was really an extraterrestrial intelligence visiting our planet and possibly concealing her real identity. And then it was Pat Marcatilio. He's the director of the legacy of that group today. He kind of saved the day for that UFO club, because he said, if we're going to survive and be a serious group, we have to concentrate on contemporary sightings, because we're not going to prove anything that happened 2,000 years ago. And it's just pointless to speculate, because it's just going to alienate a lot of people. But, contemporary sightings are something that investigators can go out and look at and investigate and collect evidence and maybe really find something. So he was elected the president of the group, and then they were able to move on after that. But can you imagine, so this is one little UFO group, but can you imagine how the whole world would react if something? Yeah, I can't even imagine the chaos that would result with all the theologies of different sects and religious groups that are out there.
Well, you're right on that. Although a new study, a very recent study, has proven that the general public worldwide is much more accepting of knowing that we're not alone, that there are other planets with other populations of beings that look like us and very much different than us. And the survey said that people are more inclined than ever to accept that. So we're on the right track here. And it's a very difficult track for some people, but in the end, I think that you have to look at the facts and all the information. It's not a little tiny bit of information. It's gigantic of people photographing with their own cameras, UFOs. We have a group here in New York who've come to our meetings and showed on slides what they had photographed, and it was undeniable.
Wow.
that it was certainly not from our planet, nothing like that. And we've had eyewitnesses come to our group and talk about what they actually saw. And some of them gave quite emotional talks that they said, I was looking at it and I still couldn't believe what I was seeing. I was walking on Fifth Avenue right near Tiffany's, one fine sunny afternoon a few years ago. And, of course, with the big buildings, especially in that area, nobody looks up. Well, maybe the reason is because you have to watch where you're going, and there's a lot of traffic, so you have to be careful. But
yeah.
I did glance up at these very beautiful, puffy white clouds, and I saw white specks zooming from one cloud to the next. And there were several of them that did that. I just stopped in my tracks and stayed there. And then I thought, I saw one going from a cloud to another cloud, and I kind of watched it to see if it would go out on the other side of the cloud. It did not. It did not go outside. And later, it went back in the same direction it had come. And this can't be easily explained. They were white dots, and they were moving incredibly quickly. Undeniably so. Now, I didn't have a camera with me at the time. I probably could have verified that with my camera, but I know what I saw.
Oh, yeah, Nick, I think you're really on to something there. Sister Thedra out in Mount Shasta used to take pictures of various oddly shaped clouds that resembled UFOs, and she said that UFOs were concealed in those clouds, especially the large lenticular clouds where the motherships could hide. And I think that some UFOs hide in clouds or generate clouds through ionizing the atmosphere around them, or they possibly penetrate the Earth's atmosphere in a meteor storm where they could hide in the where they can hide in the middle of it and evade a radar detection and everything, and kind of camouflage themselves.
Right. And some of the photographs that people have showed us, they've come to our meetings. I invited them to show what they had. And some of the photographs of undeniable UFOs were photographed in Manhattan. So you don't have to go all the way to New Mexico or Las Vegas area or that area, right here in Manhattan. And some of them were shot in broad daylight, and some of them were shot at night, but they absolutely were nothing from this planet, absolutely not. And again, they were right over Manhattan itself. Last year, one of our members, a wonderful member named Frank, asked if we could do a meeting in the daylight, in the afternoon, in Central Park. And he brought cameras with him, with other people too, the ufologist. And we did a 20-minute meditation, trying to make contact. And this is right in Central Park, right near the Cleopatra's Needle, if you know where that is, right behind the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And after about that time, the cameras were put up towards the sky, and then a few of the photographers said, there's something up there. And we said, take a look in the viewfinder. And sure enough, and I was a witness to this, there were round objects and circles. And around us, the perimeter of the circles were black and white dots. Absolutely undeniable that what we saw, and they actually documented that also. And they were attracted, I believe, to our meditation asking for contact. It was quite an afternoon. I wish you had been there, Ray. Oh, my God. I mean,
wow.
It was amazing. And that was recent. That was, Jones, I believe, last summer.
Oh, wow. Well, the next time that I get out there, I hope I could see something like that and be part of that meditation group. I did go to Las
Absolutely.
Vegas for Stairway to the Stars in November of last year. I went there with Veterans Reporter News editor Sue Phelps and to cover it. It was at the Luxor. And we went to a seminar headed up by Alexis Brooks, an African-American paranormal researcher. And it was to discuss the implications of UAP disclosures. And they had a panel there of experiencers, and they all said that they were all in agreement that the UFO disclosure is taking place now on three levels, that being the government, Hollywood, which we already discussed, and personal. And,
yes.
And what I would have to say about beyond the soft disclosure of Hollywood, for the government, right before UAP revelations in Congress on the 25th of June, 2021, there was a national poll that was conducted. And it indicated that 80% of Americans believe in the existence of UFOs, 50% have seen them, and another 15% have personally communicated with extraterrestrial or ultra-dimensional entities at various levels of contact. So the Stairway to the Stars panelists said that in lieu of those facts, as more and more people were experiencing contact with extraterrestrials or ultra-dimensional entities on a personal level, the ultimate disclosure by the government as to their existence would only come just as an acknowledging afterthought. Because so many people are already in contact with our friends from beyond.
We've
so
had many,
we,
many
we
people
are the disclosure.
Over, well, that's a good point. That's a good point. And we've had over the last 25 years, I can't believe that our group, Disclosure Network New York, has really completed almost completed the 25th year of our group here in Manhattan, but we have very proud of the group, and we have deep, deep researchers, and we've had a number of people at our meetings talk about what happened when they witnessed a UFO, in some cases close, very close up, and some of them have photographs, but some of the facts that they were giving our group were repeated by other people. So some of the observations were said by many others that were discussing what happened. Also, a couple of our people who said that they were abducted against their will had strange markings. We photographed some of them that were in various parts of their body, and in a couple of cases, they felt strongly that they had some kind of an implant underneath their skin. And in one case, they actually got medical help, and actually it came out, and there was something there, and it was examined, and they said that the material was nothing that they ever saw before. It didn't seem to be made of materials from our planet, and it was implanted in these people. And there was, of course, a lot of speculation about what that would mean. Is it tracking information? Is there another reason for ETs to do that? Now, the sad thing is, of course, that it was done against their will. And that's really objectionable. If you're taken, if something is asked of you, or something is performed physically, and it's against your will, I don't imagine that anybody would say that is correct or right. Is not correct at all.
That's horrible.
Paul
Hellyer, who was the defense minister in Canada during the Pearson administration in the early 60s, he worked very closely with NATO and, you know, toured NATO bases around the world. And he said that he knows for a fact that there's at least 80 species of extraterrestrials living and working among us right here on Earth. And he said that most of them have good intentions toward us, but there's a few rogue elements.
I would say that's absolutely true. There's good and bad in everything.
Right.
I was shocked. I have to say, honestly, I was a little bit shocked that Dr. Stephen Greer, who I've met, I've talked to him and his wife recently, and he maintains that all ETs are friendly. And I was a little bit shocked that he made that statement, because I feel, and a lot of the group or members feel, as though there's good and bad in everything, and by doing things against someone's will when they have been abducted certainly isn't a nice thing to do at all. So can't say that they're all friendly at all. So yeah, we came to that conclusion, but Dr. Greer has maintained that. Now, there may be other reasons that he is saying that, that we may or may not know about. But that was just an amazing little statement that, no, they're all friendly. And he's had many sightings with groups that he's taken to the deserts and other locations for many, many years. And they even had photographs of oh, thank you. That's my producer, Hercules, saying that we have 6 more minutes, which means we, you and I have just 3 minutes, and I have to do a closing. Ray, I want to thank you so much for gracing my podcast tonight. You are an amazingly wonderful man. You do deep research and share that with the world. I just want to thank you so much for coming on the program.
Thank you, Nick. It was a great pleasure, and thank you, Hercules, for your tending to all the techniques that make it all possible.
He does so much work, unbelievably so. He's tireless. He really is. I admire his energy and his drive. doing all these various podcasts as part of his network. He's really quite a special guy. So, and Ray, we look forward so much to having you as our Zoom meeting for the members of Disclosure Network New York tomorrow. That will be live. But after that, a few days later, we're going to post that on YouTube. So Disclosure Network New York will have a talk, which will be a different talk, of course, than what we did tonight. So very much excited about that. And my members have said, can't wait. Ray, much love to you. Much love to you always. This is Nick Curl.
Thank you, Nick, and much love to you and Hercules and all of the New York Disclosure Group.
Oh, thank you so much. So this is Nick Curl for Disclosure Network New York, wishing you all an enlightened journey as you connect the dots to seek truth. Till next time, be informed, stay safe, and be very, very kind to one another. Much love to everyone out there, not only on this planet, but beyond. We all are part of an immense intergalactic family in the vast master universe. So please remember that and act with love and compassion always. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night to you both, and thank you for a wonderful show. It was fascinating and fact-filled, and now I'm curious to learn more about your books, and I'm looking forward to your next presentation. Thank you very much, Ray, and thank you, Nick, for bringing us this show. And thank you to all our wonderful audience for tuning in, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, whether you called in and you're in our queue, or whether you're going to check us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Thanks again, Nick and Ray.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody. Good night. Much love to all. Much love.